Today on Straight Talk Africa, the challenges of political transitions in Africa, the Democratic Republic of Congo and Joseph Kabila, in the Gambia, where incumbent President Yahya Jammeh says he's going nowhere despite losing an election, and in Ghana, which has become Africa's gold standard for democracy in the region. That's coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. I am Sheka Sali.
And hello to all our viewers and listeners on the continent and elsewhere. I'm Ayan Bior, your social media reporter.
Today, it's a discussion and analysis on the politics of the changing of the guard in Africa.
And coming up later in our STA inbox, we asked you, our audience, to tell us about the political challenges your country faced in 2016. Your emails and social media comments poured in, and we'll reveal some of them ahead on Straight Talk Africa.
In America, as in Africa, democracies value a smooth transition of leadership. Our colleague Paul Sisco takes a look at the challenges of political transition in Africa.
You voted for change.
Muhammadu Buhari was elected president of Nigeria in May 2015, the first time an incumbent had been defeated in a fair and peaceful election in Africa's most populous country. The peaceful transfer of power from the incumbent Goodluck Jonathan was universally celebrated as a victory for Nigeria, for Africa, and for democracy. John Magufuli was sworn in as president of Tanzania on November 5, 2016, after a relatively peaceful contest and after Tanzanian President Jakaya Kikwete, respecting constitutional limits, left office at the completion of his second term. And in Ghana, presidential power transferred peacefully to Ghana's newly elected president, Akufo-Addo.
A new dawn has arisen in Ghana, which will enable us to build a new Ghanaian civilization, which will be the beacon of Africa and the wonder of the world.
He took the traditional sword of authority and oath of office just days ago on January 7th. It marked another rare, peaceful transfer of power in a region often plagued by political crises. And it surprised many when the peaceful and democratic trend appeared to be continuing in the Gambia, when longtime ruler President Yahya Jammeh conceded defeat to presidential challenger Adama Barrow after Gambia's December 1st vote. A week later, Jammeh declared the vote fraudulent and is now refusing to leave office. ECOWAS, the African Union, the United Nations Security Council are recognizing Adama Barrow as president-elect of Gambia. Now to the Democratic Republic of Congo. President Joseph Kabila's time in office officially ended December 19th, but he has been unable and unwilling to facilitate elections or a peaceful transfer of power. Political analysts suggest three possible outcomes to the current political crisis in the DRC: a transitional process leading to a new legitimate government, a bloody popular uprising ousting Kabila, and or the slow collapse of the government, further poverty and hardship for the people of the Congo, and increasing regional and international isolation. Historically, regarding the transition of presidential power, wisdom begs consideration of two great leaders. George Washington, after helping win freedom for the United States of America from Britain, was unanimously elected president twice. He served two terms before stepping down for the good of the democracy and the American people. And Nelson Mandela, who after breaking the back of apartheid and 27 years in jail, without bitterness served as president of South Africa for 5 years, one term, allowing for a peaceful, democratic transition of power. Paul Sisco, VOA News, Washington.
Thanks, Paul, for that report. Joining us here in our Washington studios are three distinguished guests: Democratic Republic of Congo Minister of Communications Lambert Mende, Mulegwa Zihindura, an attorney and president of the Center for Political and Strategic Studies in the DRC capital Kinshasa, and Ni Akwete, African policy analyst and activist based here in the nation's capital, Washington, D.C. Well, gentlemen, I have to say that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the three of you on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank Thank you very much for having us.
You're most welcome, gentlemen. Later in the program, we'll give you, the audience, a chance to call and talk with our guests. The number to call is 202-619-3111, and the U.S. country code is 1. I have to say that I am particularly delighted to have the honor to host you for the first time on Straight Talk Africa, Mr. Mende.
Thank you.
How are you?
Okay, I'm okay.
How was your trip from Addis? I gather that you arrived in D.C. this morning.
A bit tired, but we have to talk about our continent and our country, of course.
Duty calls, of course.
Yes.
Now, talking about duty, how does it look like in Kinshasa? Because we expected at this point in time to have a new president, a new government, but that doesn't seem to be happening. Why?
Well, I heard that in the comment, President Kabila was unwilling to organize elections. This is not the real situation. I think we have to talk about the real situation. We have a country of 2 million and more square kilometers. We have a country that have been attacked 3 or more times. And they have a problem of security challenges, and we have these problems of money. So all these problems brought President Kabila, who is in charge of organizing everything as the head of state, to call upon all the members of the society, majority, opposition, and to meet with them together and say, look, we are having problems.
You talked about how you have problems, for example, of money.
Of security also.
The problems of security.
Yes.
What did you know about those problems, and when did you, in fact, know it?
You know, you can't know when you will be attacked. We were attacked 3 times or 4 times during this last term of President Kabila in office. And some part of the country is not under the control of the National Army as we are talking. Mm. The army is busy fighting some armed group from even outside. The country is so rich, you said it.
Very
maybe
rich.
It is victim of this wealth. Everybody have a look there. And we have also some foreigners who have decided to profit of that situation we are meeting to try to put us under their control.
And you border, of course, with 9 countries, correct?
Of course, we are not talking only of the 9 African countries. I'm talking also of non-African countries, like foreigners, Western countries who are trying to bring us down and to try to come back with a new colonial policy we are fighting.
You know, I was reading a book called The Looting Machine, and it is written by a gentleman by the name Thomas Burgess. He is, in fact, a journalist who used to work for the Financial Times. And he talks about the relationships, of course, that your country has, especially because you have huge wealth. We're talking about minerals here. We're talking about coltan, for example. When anybody really uses their telephone, you know, cell phone or laptop and what have you, they are pretty much interacting with your country. And yet, these countries, these companies in foreign lands have actually prospered, but your people are supposed to be some of the poorest in the world. How do you justify that?
Maybe this is the reason why our people are still poor, because those who are selling this coltan abroad are not Congolese. Maybe that is why we are under this insecurity situation, because people are coming to try to attack us and to loot. That is why we decided to speak as members of the national community, to visit all those challenges and to organize a way of having elections. You know, elections are there for people. Elections are not there like, let me say, music or amusement or what. We are trying to give the decision to people. But which people?
Mm.
People are there in the forest, running away from killers. running away from armed groups, running away from foreigners who are coming to attack them. So the situation is not the same. But we came to a common understanding last week. We decided by ourselves to extend the period of enrolling people for the elections for 1 year and to organize the election at the end of this year. Because if elections are not free, if they are not fair, so there is no reason to call for elections.
But that is the second agreement. The first agreement allowed, for example, for your government to stay in power until 2018. You even appointed the prime minister. So no. What are you going to do now?
No, it is not the agreement that accepted that the government be appointed, remain until April 18. No. This is the constitution that writes that until an election is held, the president, the parliament, must remain in the office until a new president is elected, until a new parliament is elected. That is the provision within the constitution.
I see. Mulegwa Zihindura, to what extent is that constitutional court independent?
Well, you know, the constitution of the Democratic Republic of Congo is a constitution that was done by referendum. And I think the minister is making reference to Article 70 of the constitution, which stipulates that in order for a president to be replaced, a new president must be elected. And that's a constitution. So legally...
But you haven't answered my question. My question is very simple. To what extent is that constitutional court independent, for example, of the executive?
No, absolutely. The constitution, I mean, each person in the Democratic Republic of Congo, each branch of the government has what they can do. I mean, we have the judiciary, for instance. And the judiciary has ruled, actually, that Article 70 of the constitution is correct. And that President Kabila cannot leave power until such a time that we have elected a new president. So everything is legal. There is absolutely no question. The president of the Democratic Republic of Congo has not gone out of the constitution.
Everything is legal, but you and I know that sometimes rules, in fact, can be used, or laws can, in fact, be used to undermine democracy. The major opposition groups in your country, frankly, do not seem to look at it that way. They say, yes, it is illegal, but is it legitimate?
Yes, it is legitimate. It's legitimate. You know, the legitimacy is when you, as a leader, you respect the contract that you have with people that have elected you. And President Kabila has stayed within the mandate of the Constitution. Now, talking about the opposition, you know, and this is one of the challenges of democracy or an inclusive political system in Africa, is that people know when there's a problem, like the situation in Congo right now. All the Congolese politicians know there is a problem. They do understand why we are not able to have elections right now. They know that we've had some serious problem. We know that they know that we've not had voter registration due to the fact that at the point where we were supposed to have voter registration, there was a war in the Congo by the M23. They all know these problems. And they do understand they need to have voter registration. But because politicians right now are so caught up in trying to take over from President Kabila, they forget their realities, you know. I mean, they get their minds to go blank when they know the real problems. Now, but I'm going to add something. You know what is so interesting now? You know, there's been two political agreements in the Democratic Republic of Congo. The first one was on October 18th. You are talking about the Prime Minister Badibanga. And then there's a second one. There's a second agreement. And I know there's a lot of arrangements by the Catholic Church and others to try to see how people can share power during this time.
The first one was sponsored by the African Union,
the
correct?
African Union, correct.
Yeah. The second one is by the Catholic Church.
It was mediated by the Catholic Church. Mm-hmm. Now, what is going to be very good about this is once they make arrangements and to have people join the government and to understand the complex around the government, to understand the difficulties that they have not to organize the elections. And I think you will see these politicians begin to talk different.
I see. Well, Now we will pause for a short break and would like to remind you that Straight Talk Africa is now on the social networking website Twitter. And we are tweeting live. Follow us at VOA Shaka. That's VOA Shaka, and join in on today's discussion with your questions and comments. Don't forget to use the hashtag VOA Africa Politics. And we are still on Facebook. Just enter the keyword Straight Talk Africa, become a fan, and connect with other friends of the Voice of America. We'll be right back with you, so please don't go away.
We are able to touch on things that are important to people on an everyday basis. We hope that our viewers are getting inspired when they watch our show. They're getting a view of the world from a different perspective, things that perhaps are not in their immediate vicinity. Today, I could put in on the show something that is a little different, a little unique, and this gives me that inspiration to come to work.
The peaceful transfer of power from one freely elected president to the next. I committed to President-elect Trump that my administration would ensure the smoothest possible transition, just as President Bush did for me. Because it's up to all of us to make sure our government can help us meet the many challenges we still face. Only if all of us, regardless of party affiliation or particular interests, help restore the sense of common purpose that we so badly need right now. And that's what I want to focus on tonight, the state of our democracy. Understand, democracy does not require uniformity. Our founders argued, they quarreled, eventually they compromised. They expected us to do the same. But they knew that democracy does require a basic sense of solidarity. The idea that for all our outward differences, we're all in this together, that we rise or fall as one.
U.S. President Barack Obama. Of course, within a week, there will be a new kid on the block here in Washington, D.C. Let me come to you, Ni Akwete. President Barack Obama.
Yes.
That is his final speech as President of the United States, yes. As POTUS. From sometime next week, is it next week? The other week. He will be former President Barack Obama. And he will still retain his dignity. You know, when he came to power nearly 8 years ago, there were very, very high hopes.
Yes.
He came, of course, on the slogan, "Yes, we can." And yesterday he said, "Yes, we did." Did he, in fact, accomplish that, in your view?
I think he did, of course, because the big question, of course, is what exactly was he referring to? You can look at it. What was accomplished? He did manage to become president. He mounted an unusual campaign, and he won. And he took over the reins of government. Now, given our focus on Africa, and given that this American president, for one more week, his father is from Africa, people look at his accomplishments, sometimes focusing on Africa itself. And frequently, I've heard Africans say he hasn't done enough. And I think that is unfair to him for two reasons. Number one, he's the president of the United States, the most powerful country in the world with interests all over. I've lived in Washington. I'm an activist. I try to get more American, proper American attention on Africa. But I have to confess to you, Africa is not number one on America's list. Unless and until we organize and change that, it will remain the same. They have what they think of, my term for it is, we have bigger fish to fry. Certain things are more important to them. That's number one. Number two, if you look at Mr. Obama's time in office, even he has critics, in the United States, on the Republican side, even racially there, I was even reading Professor Cornel West, criticizing him. And I disagree with that criticism also, because there is no mention of the buzzsaw, of the storm in which he was tossed. The very day that he was installed, that very afternoon, Republicans met and said, we are never going to cooperate with him on anything. I am talking about hours. They didn't even know what his program was. He hadn't spent 1 hour in the White House. They were determined to get rid of him. They would not vote for anything that he aligned.
He was supposed to be a one-term president.
Yes, he was supposed to be a one-term president, and that is the politicians in Congress. There were others out in the community. You've got what they called the Tea Party. You've got right-wing radio who pumps all kinds of stuff about him. Even the newly elected president spent 5 years. I'm talking about Mr. Trump. He spent 5 years saying that Mr. Obama was not born in America and therefore he had no right to be an American.
That he was born in Kenya, in Mombasa.
Right. And in that case, to me, it's strange because American law says you have to be a natural-born American. It does not talk about where you are born. John McCain was born in Panama.
But his father was serving in the military.
And Mr. Obama's mother, everybody knows, was a white American woman from Kansas. Regardless of where he was born, he was still American. But these people hated him and disliked him so much because of his color and because of his ideology, they were determined to stop him. So I'm saying, if you factor in everything that he had to run against, you realize that he was not perfect, but given the opposition that he ran into, given the difficulties, given the imploding economy when he took over, given the two wars, different people will have to judge him by their own standard. By my standard, he achieved more than anybody had a right to expect. And therefore, I agree with him. Yes, he did.
If you look at some of the recent public opinion polls, he is pretty much respected, really, across these United States of America. Does that mean, for example, that Americans are better off today than they were 8 years ago when he took over office?
In fact, I think that is a great question. That's how I will put it, because, you know, the origin of that phrase, the origin of that question was Ronald Reagan. When he wanted to win, he said, look, all you have to do when you are comparing one party or one president with another is ask whether you are better off under the existing president. Mm-hmm. But you see, under Obama there, when Mrs. Clinton was running this last time, the question wasn't asked. If it had been asked, I doubt if any honest American, not even a single one, would have answered differently than to say, yes, of course, we are better off. The economy is much better. As he likes saying, Bin Laden is dead. Most of the American troops are home. He's done so many other things. So definitely Americans are better today than they were 8 years ago when he was elected.
Then how do you reconcile that with the fact that the election of Donald Trump as president of the United States would seem, frankly, in the view of many, a referendum, perhaps, on Obama's presidency?
Well, my own reading of it is that, you know, of course, Obama is the first to... the clip that you was shown was just from last night. And he had been saying, yes, we've done a lot, we've come far, but we haven't done everything that needs to be done. So there's still work to be done. And when you spread that across the United States, pockets of areas, not everybody has benefited from the recovered economy. A lot of people complain that Wall Street benefited a lot, but there are pockets of unemployment in the United States. There are pockets of poverty. And so those areas, they felt like they have not been able to benefit. So this last election, it was a question of who is going to address our concerns. But let me emphasize again that throughout Mr. Obama's 8 years, the right-wing media in this country had a full campaign against him. In fact, Mr. Obama himself joked more than once. He said, listen, if I just listen to Fox News, I wouldn't vote for Obama, given the things that they say about him. So I am saying part of Mr. Trump's election was based on people who were fed a lot of false information, vicious information, made-up information about Mr. Obama.
What about the African continent? In 2009, I had the privilege of being in your country, Ghana, in the capital, Accra, with U.S. President Barack Obama.
Yes.
I remember the keynote speech that he made.
Yes.
And he said, Africa does not need strong men. What Africa needs, really, are strong institutions.
I am
Did
so...
Did he accomplish that?
Up to a point. Not enough, even by my own evaluation. As you can see, I mean, I noticed the good things he's done in this country, not perfect. Even in the rest of the world, not perfect. And in Africa, he's done some good things. I spent some time praising YALI, the Young African Leaders Initiative. At the same time, though...
Now known, of course, as the Mandela Washington Fellowship.
Precisely. Mm-hmm. I think it's a great investment, and I'm glad that people in Africa are warming up to it. But my point will be that where I fault American foreign policy for a long time, including under President Obama, is that the United States, again, last night, he emphasized the importance of democracy to the United States, and the United States has been at it for more than 240 years. Africa is starting, and he did say in Accra, 2 miles from my high school, that we don't need dictators, we need strong institutions. But the United States has continued, in my view, and this is the main work I do in Washington, to support dictatorships in Africa. Right now, they are supporting Rwanda, which is a clear dictatorship. Your own country, Uganda, in my personal opinion, the U.S. supports them too much because they are not a fully-fledged democracy. They support the Ethiopians. They support the Egyptians. So, in fact, where I give American foreign policy a failing grade is that even though they talk a good talk, they make too many exceptions and support dictatorships in Africa. And that is bad for Africa and bad for America's image.
What about when senior American officials talk about the vacuums of vital national security interests? Translation, what does that mean?
Well, you know, they use it to say whatever argument they are making for the moment. Because, in fact, when you listen to Mr. Obama from last night and other American leaders under other circumstances, you'll see that when they step back, they will actually tell you, even now today, they say it a lot. You've got Russia ascendant, assertive. You've got China assertive. So American leaders will say to you, that bothers us because we think when the world is more democratic, is good for America. Except that when they go to Africa, it's short-term thinking. So they support dictatorships. One of the things that I don't think, I know that our audience is in Africa.
They support dictatorship?
Yes, they do support dictatorships in Africa.
Yeah, but it has been argued in the context of saying, yes, he may be a bad guy, but he is our own bad guy.
And
what about that?
Yes, even if you look at that from an American point of view, the beauty of democracy is you can have disagreements, you can have debates. So my own debate on that issue is, even when you say he's a bad guy, but he's our bad guy, that is very short-term thinking. I will give you an example. The United States could have had much warmer relations with South Africa, but South Africans have not forgotten that the United States supported apartheid. They have South Africans have warmer relations with Cuba, much to the chagrin of many Americans and because of Castro, but Castro supported the liberation movement. My point being, when the United States says, this guy is a bad guy, but he's our bad guy, for a short term, especially during the Cold War, especially during terrorism, but there are long-term costs because the people who live under dictatorships that are supported by the United States, they don't forget. Our African proverb says, when an axe cuts a tree, the axe forgets, but the tree doesn't forget. So there are African countries where they don't forget that they've been governed brutally by dictatorships, and they know who supported some of those dictatorships. Chad is an example.
Unfortunately, time happens not to be our best ally, but the Americans might tell you they have a good policy on the Democratic Republic of the Congo. You are tuned into Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of a discussion in a moment, but first here is Ayen Bior. Take it away, Ayen.
Thanks, Shaka. Still to come, we'll reveal some of the fantastic feedback we've received from you, our audience, through social media.
Not just the next generation of African leaders, they are today's leaders. And this is the time to invest in them. Today, not tomorrow. So let's connect. Let's engage with each other on issues that will transform our societies. Innovation, leadership, entrepreneurship, things that you're doing to move the continent forward to make you the greatest generation that Africa has known. It's Upfront every Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
Welcome back to Straight Talk Africa, live from Washington. Once again, it's time to bring in my colleague and social media reporter, Ayen. Take it away again, Ayen.
Well, thanks again, Shaka. We received tremendous feedback in our STA inbox to this week's question. Africa has faced so many challenges in 2016 with various elections, food shortages, violence, and many other woes. We take an in-depth look at the challenges of political transitions in Africa, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Tanzania, and Gambia, to name a few. This leads us to our question of the week, which asks, what political challenges did your country face in 2016? Well, starting off the conversation is Desmond with our letter of the week.
Our letter of the week comes from Desmond Osiatutu from Ghana, who writes, there were many challenges my country went through during the ruling government. Looting and sharing of government properties was rampant. Corruption was their food, and unemployment was a disaster in our country. Members of the ruling party paid huge amounts to themselves without any contract with the government. The state coffers were misused to cater for party officials. The amount used in developmental infrastructure was high as compared to others in making roads, building hospitals, schools, and making renovation. In all, I will say bad governance was the challenge.
Before we begin, I'd like to thank all of you for using our social media platform to communicate with us. And another reminder that we are tweeting live today. Use the hashtag VOA Africa Politics. And if you haven't yet, please follow us at VOA Shaka. And speaking of, let's go to a tweet from Martin Manyel-Wugol, who tweets, deadly power struggle in my country, South Sudan. Now to a comment from Facebook fan Ayide David Achu, who writes, in Nigeria, we were in a recession and inflation has hit the roof courtesy of government policies. In the northern part of the country, the insurgency and the herdsmen killed in thousands. We are in a precarious movement. And Shaka, other social media users echoed those concerns about the inflation and the economy in their respective countries.
Lambert?
Well, I think that each country has its problems, and what they are seeing is not false. I think they are meeting problems, but I think they should take time to try to work on solving the problems by themselves. I think the problem in some African country is the way some people are fond of going outside to get so-called solutions. I don't think solutions are abroad.
So you're talking about African solutions for African problems?
Yes, African ownership. They must take on themselves the decision to change their way of living without going outside. And we have suffered a lot in Congo with this kind of policy of, let me say, culture of going abroad. I think Mulego has said here about our main political opposition party who criticized democratically our government. But what Mulego didn't emphasize that the meeting of that opposition political party was organized in Belgium, in a town called Gemval, with the support of the former colonial rulers. So how do you get solution from those who are living, who got their prosperity from empowering you and getting you poor and the poorest, and you go to them to find a solution to become, I don't know, to recover. That is the problem of
Africa. But how
African.
Do you respond to someone, Mr. Mende, who yes. might say, yes, you can talk about African solutions to African problems, but frankly, that is simply talking the talk. You have yet to demonstrate that you can, in fact, walk that talk so that people can walk the walk.
When we met problems in our country, we had a lot of pressures, even from United States, mm-hmm. that the all the world must implicate, involve mm-hmm. in searching for solutions. We were in our decision that only Congolese mm-hmm. must solve the problem of Congo. At least African. Mm-hmm. That is why we had a first meeting with a mediation from AU, African Union. And the second meeting, Mr. Mulega told you, from Congolese bishops.
Your own people.
Our own people. And I think
Indigenous solution.
And so I think solutions came from mm-hmm. these two meetings. I think this is what we found.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chair. Are you any more reaction from social media, please?
Yes, in fact, let's go to another comment from a Facebook fan, Antidius Kagabukama, who writes, here in Tanzania, the opposition parties have been banned from organizing and conducting meetings. Also, too much power has been taken by the police, and some politicians have been arrested. Social media users are arrested once they criticize the government for being unfair and dictate kind of leadership. And our last Facebook comment comes from Mohamed Ahmed Mansour from Monrovia, Liberia. He writes, despite all the progress made in 2016, political institutions are not exactly helping out in Liberia. The parliament, a number of ministries, the justice system, and security services seem partially paralyzed in light of internal strife and turf battles. Corruption remains a major problem. The division in parliament last year is just one example of failure to pursue initiatives that address immediate pressing needs, such as personal security, food security, health care, safe drinking water, sanitation, and education. Well, Shaka, two very interesting comments. Your thoughts?
Very interesting indeed. What about you, Mulegwa Zihindura, the man from Bukavu?
Well, thank you very much for actually reminding
me.
Exactly, 100% mushy, very happy. In fact, every time you say the kid from Kabale, I always think that I'm from Kabare, actually.
And why not? In fact, we come from the same corridor.
So
it wasn't for the Bayin 1884-85 conference that they decided to divide Africa among the Europeans without a single African sitting on that huge chair.
Yeah,
I saw the Americans were even observers, but no African.
Yeah, I happen to be from a clan in the Congo called Bega. And Kagame, the president of Rwanda,
Abega.
Is also Mwega.
Yeah. Yes,
so, you know, we are all the same people. But coming back to serious business, you know, I saw the comment from the fellow from Tanzania. You know, we have one big important thing in Congo, and this is the success by President Kabila, and this is part of his vision. You know, when talking about the challenges, you know, when President Kabila took power in the country, he had some serious challenges, including trying to rule a country at war, trying to rule a country that has just gone through years of dictatorship, and try to bring in an inclusive political system. The president understood something very important. In Africa today, no one can keep power today saying, I will keep it by myself, and so on and so forth. The president understood that. And that's why, because of his vision, he put together an inclusive political system. The Democratic Republic of Congo today is the only country I know that has over 500 political parties. So the liberalities of political parties, unfortunately, I think, as the fellow was saying, is that what happens many times, people confuse an inclusive political system or democracy with anarchy. A country cannot be anarchical, even in the United States today. If you want to have a demonstration in the United States, you have to have a permit. from the authorities. There's a march here coming up on the 21st.
And the chances are that you will get that permit.
And you, in the Democratic Republic of Congo, you will get that permit.
Really? Yes.
Yes, and they do get the permit.
Often it seems like they don't get the permit.
No, but I will explain to you. Let me give you a good example. September 19th, last year, the government of the Democratic Republic of Congo gives the opposition a permit to march. Guess what they do? If they see anybody, for instance, one little girl in the town of Limete was killed because she went to school that day. You know, that's not democracy. That's not a democratic system.
We'll talk a little bit more about that because the state of Congo itself, in fact, is responsible for also killing a lot of people who are demonstrating peacefully against certain policies. Well, thanks again for bringing us this week's audience reaction.
Well, that does it for today's social media segment. Just a reminder that we appreciate all the feedback, whether it's through social media or other means. Please keep them coming. And if you're a new fan, drop us a line at africatv@voanews.com. Once again, our email address is africatv@voanews.com. Or post your comment on our Facebook page. Enter the keywords Straight Talk Africa. Be sure to visit us online at voaafrica.com. Or you can join our YouTube channel. Sign up to VOA TV 2 Africa. And follow us on Twitter at VOA Shaka. A reminder that the show is streaming live every Wednesday. Go to VOA Straight Talk Africa TV program page on our website. Or simply watch us live on your mobile device. Just download the VOA mobile app. Now let's take a look at what's on tap for next week's program.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, Gambian President Yahya Jammeh fired 12 ambassadors after they called for him to step aside and allow the newly elected opposition leader, Adama Barrow, to take power, a recommendation he has also heard from ECOWAS, the African Union, and the United Nations. That's right here on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Welcome back to a discussion and analysis on the politics of the changing of the guard in Africa. Our distinguished guests are Democratic Republic of Congo Communications Minister Lambert Mende, Mureguzi Hindura Anatone, and President of the Center for Political and Strategic Studies in the DRC capital Kinshasa, Ania Kwete, African policy analyst and activist here in Washington, D.C. Well, gentlemen, once again, I have to say that I am profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the three of you on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're most welcome. Now, before the break, of course, we're talking about the Congo, how democratic it is or how undemocratic it is. What about you, Nia Kwete, as an observer from a distance? What about the fact, frankly, that since October, I think it was October 30th, 1960?
No,
correct?
June 30th,
1960. You regain your political independence from the Belgium. Someone might say, frankly, how come there has never been, since then, a smooth transition of power from one individual to another?
Okay. Now, is the question to me or my colleague?
Why don't you...
Oh, to me?
Yeah, from what you have observed.
Yes.
And it's not the only country, by the way. I should note that there are several other countries in that club.
Yes.
Including my own country, Uganda.
Yes, yes, which I did mention in one of my previous answers. There is no question that there are many African countries that are not practicing what I would consider acceptable democracy, and part of it is, part of my definition of democracy is smooth transfer of power after free and fair elections, so that we move away from monarchies, we move away from presidents for life, so some of which... We have tried. Now, I think also when you look at the continent broadly, that to my mind, there are factors and trends that explain what goes on in each country, but they are levels. There are trends and factors peculiar to a given country. There are trends across the continent. But given my work, there are also the international role where you've got world powers that meddle in the affairs. Well, a couple of my brothers have mentioned some of these issues. So when it comes to the Congo, though, from 1960, until right now, why haven't they had smooth transfer from one elected administration to another? I think there are many, many reasons. The Congo is a very good example, from my view, of outside powers meddling, particularly we know that with the support of this country, the United States, they supported a ruler in the Congo for more than 30 years. I'm talking about Mr. Mobutu Sese Seko. Yes, because as you mentioned, they say, well, this guy may be bad, but he's good for us. He's good for what we are doing right now. That was the middle of the Cold War.
But what about the Africans themselves? Because foreigners cannot do that alone. There has to be a dynamic. They have to be able to interact with some elements within a particular country.
Oh, yes, they do. They do, in fact, which is why they prop up dictators. You know, when you live in a country, I mean, during the Cold War, the Americans had a term, captive nations. You know, we are talking about governments here. We are talking about presidents. A given government has a lot of power. It is given to a particular person. When that person uses the power badly, and if he's getting outside support, it is very difficult for ordinary individuals to stand up to them and not to lose their lives. So, yes, the outside powers partner with strongmen, which is the point that Obama made in Accra, that we don't need strongmen. The part that he left out was that the strongmen partner with outsiders. Now, in the case of the Congo, I also think that the spillover from the Rwandan genocide. So what I'm saying is you look at the Cold War and the rule of Mobutu and others, and it was when he was gotten rid of through wars, I think you have to look at that. But you also have to look at what happened across the border with the invasion of, after Mr. Mobutu was gone, the second invasion by Rwanda and by Uganda, to the extent that even the Ugandans and the Rwandans fought on Congolese territory over the resources of the Congolese. I think my brothers have been very nuanced and diplomatic in the way that they have mentioned it. But that has been a factor. And I will add to you one more thing. It seems to me that right now the United States is putting pressure on Mr. Kabila to do the right thing and hold elections and leave. They are putting a lot of pressure. I think Africa needs democracy to move forward. We really do. I believe that strongly. We won't move forward until we have democracy. So I think that is a good thing. But U.S.